This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88.
Welcome to another episode of Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host, and this is episode 140. If you're new to the show, let me just say, like I've said many times, the 88 friends are the keys to a piano. This show gives me the opportunity to sing lots of songs that I've written over the last 53 years, and I've really enjoyed pulling some of the songs out of the archives and being able to share them. They bring back a lot of memories to me. And I want to start tonight with a song that was on my CD called The Anchor Holes, which was released in 1997. This song is called All the Empty People.
See them walking down the street. I see them when I go out to eat. I see them standing in the park after dark. I see them on the subway train. I see them at the football game. I see them everywhere that I turn. Looking for love, getting burned. All the empty people who are running out of hope, going through the motions, they're not living, they're just trying hard to cope. It's at an epidemic scale. How many victims, no one can tell. It reaches every village and town. Just look around, look around. And all the empty people who are running. Child away from home. They're like a man without a country, so they're on. But the search goes on and on.
Said, I'll turn no one away. Come unto me if you're under great stress. I'll give you rest, sweet rest. He saw the empty people and he came to give them hope. He came to give them new life, something so much more than trying. Can no salvations
That was All the Empty People. And we released that song in 1997. It was on a CD of mine called The Anchor Holes. That was when the song first came out. I remember writing that song, All the Empty People, when we lived in Massachusetts. I lived in Massachusetts with my wife from 1978 till 1994. All of our kids were born up there. And much of that time was spent in Marlborough, Massachusetts. The last few years we lived in Clinton, Massachusetts. But I remember Marlborough had a park on Main Street. It was on a hill and there was a wall there, and it was a place where a lot of young people congregated. And I would pass that park night after night, and I would see all the people there hanging out, and I could see the emptiness in the eyes of some of them. And that's how that song was inspired, All the Empty People. And there are a lot of empty people all over the world. And Jesus said, I came to give you life and life more abundantly. He said, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. We're going way back tonight in this episode because I'm going to replay a testimony that a lot of people enjoyed a few months ago. So because of that, I want to pull out a song out of the archives, out of the early, early archives, called I Wouldn't Go Back. We named our first album after that song. I don't think CDs were even invented then. But the I Wouldn't Go Back. And I just want to play it. Some of you may remember it from many years ago. It's a moving song. So here we go. I Wouldn't Go Back.
Before you came, lying on my bed, the ceiling over my head kept screaming, who are you anyway? What could I say? Sitting in my living room, tears streaming down my face, life was such a waste. Then I met you.
My guest on the show tonight is my great friend, Wayne Simstrott from Bloomington, Indiana. Wayne and I have been friends for about 53 years, and I've been very involved with his whole family, great, great family, from Ohio originally. Wayne's been on the show a couple of times, and Wayne told me something not long ago that I didn't realize. He said, I like a lot of your songs, but my absolute favorite is Let Me Worship You Today. And so before we listen to our conversation that we had a few months ago, again, I want to play that song for my great friend. This is Let Me Worship You Today. It's just me and my piano.
Behold your glory. Let me gaze
gaze into your face. Just let me stay here before you. Don't make me leave this place. Just let me sit for a while at your feet. Just let me savor these moments so sweet. In the stillness of this moment, there is nothing I'd rather be doing right now than staying here worshiping you. This is holy ground where I'm standing, just because it's you. So let the things of this earth fade from my view as I linger here worshiping you. Let the things of this earth fade from my view as I linger here worshiping you. As I linger here. As I linger here worshiping you.
Episode 86 of this show was titled The Little Greenhouse on Fifth Street. And in that episode, we talked about the early days of what became known as the Jesus Movement, a national movement that has become a talking point in the last year, especially through the release of the movie Jesus Revolution. It was happening all over the country, but we lived in Anderson, Indiana, and I want to talk with my friend Wayne Simstrott about some of the early things that happened there in our city. It was featured in a book about the Jesus Movement that was cataloged different things, where they cataloged some of the things that happened in Anderson. So I want to go back to that interview we had a few months ago with my great friend, Wayne. Hello, Wayne.
Hello there. So good to be able to talk to you.
And congratulations on what in about another month and a half will be your 50th wedding anniversary.
Isn't that amazing? And I remember when you were there.
I do too. Yeah, I don't know if people remember this. We talked about this at one time. You and Diane decided to get married. I think it was Labor Day weekend, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes.
1972.
72, yeah. Yes.
Because it'll be 50 years. And you guys wanted us to sing at your wedding. We were in Vermont, and we were scheduled to do 6 Saturday night concerts in Burlington at the City Hall Auditorium. But your wedding happened the day it was. They were Saturday nights, but the last one for some reason was on Sunday, and so your wedding date was the day before the last Vermont concert. And of course, we were in Vermont and Indiana. It's like you were in Indiana, so it's 1,000 miles. And you said, "I really would like you to sing." And we said, "Oh, can you do it a week later?" But that was the date you had. So we drove 1,000 miles to do your wedding. And while the cake was in our mouth, we were starting up the van, and we drove. You got married on a Saturday. We drove all night long and got there about an hour before the concert.
That was amazing.
We played awful. It was terrible, but we were so tired. But hey, 50 years later, I'm glad we did it.
Yes, that was a wonderful time.
You're listening to a podcast called Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. We're in the middle of a conversation with my friend Wayne Simsrott, who now lives in Bloomington, Indiana. Later on in our conversation, we moved over to the subject of coffee houses, Christian coffee houses, and really the subject of this episode, which I've called The Little Greenhouse on Fifth Street. So let's take up the conversation when we turn to the coffee house. Believe me, I've sung in so many coffee houses all over the country. I was talking to somebody last night that, now we didn't have them, but the standard gear in most coffee houses were these old electric cables, spools. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
you just sit them all over a room and then you were in business. But anyway,
yeah,
I thought we would talk about our experience, because the book even mentions Ray Renner, and it mentions Anderson, Indiana, where we lived, the name of our fellowship. It mentions the fishermen. So we didn't really know this was happening nationally, coffee houses and things like that. I was talking to Ray the other night, and basically in that book, the man talks about the newspaper calling Ray and saying, are you guys a part of the Jesus movement? And I don't remember if you, don't know if you remember Ray's answer, but Ray, he didn't really know about it. He said, well, Jesus is moving, and he's moving in Anderson, so I guess we are. But some of the things we did, we weren't aware that that was a trend all over the country. We just were led of the Spirit to do it. And
yes,
coffee houses were one of them. So I want to talk about our little coffee house.
Oh, sure.
And I'm calling this The Little Greenhouse on Fifth Street.
Yeah, we had a name then. We called it
Solomon's Porch.
That's
correct. And tell the crowd out there where that comes from.
That's coming from the first few chapters of Acts, when it mentions Solomon's Porch several times, because it was a place where the early church got together, and there were no church buildings to gather in, and it was just where they gathered together. And it was called a place called Solomon's Porch. So we named that little house Solomon's Porch.
And tell me if I'm right, wasn't Solomon's Porch sort of like a wing off to the side of the temple or some? It was near the temple, right? But it wasn't in the temple, right?
It was a covered area that was adjacent to the temple, but not part of it exactly. Yes.
So that was our name at the little house on Fifth Street. But I want to talk about the house.
Okay.
And your father owned this house. And let me just say this.
That is correct.
You were from Lebanon, Ohio.
Correct. Yes. My family was from Lebanon, Ohio. And when my brother and I went to college, my father bought up the property with two small houses, and one he rented out. And my brother and I stayed in the other house to attend the college, about a block and a half off campus.
Okay, and this was Anderson, Indiana. Indiana. Yeah, and you were from Ohio.
In Anderson, Indiana. It suddenly emptied. The people who were renting it left, and so it was just an empty house. We've been together in, yes.
And do you remember, Wayne, let me back up here.
Okay.
Your brother, Bud, who died this year.
Correct.
He and I and Ray Renner and a guy named Greg, and there was another guy named Ron who was there with us just about a month and a half or something like that. But we had left. We were the original fisherman group, and we had gone on all throughout the summer and fall of 1970.
Correct.
We had traveled, we went to Kentucky, Virginia, Maryland, Texas. We went a lot of places. But near the end of that year, Ray, who always seemed to know what the next thing to do was, said, I think we're done for a while. He said, I was praying, and I saw this
a mega sign in my mind, which is Greek for the end. And he says, I think we need to stop traveling and we need to go back to Anderson.
Yes.
And it wasn't long before he said, I've got this feeling we need to open up a coffee house. Well, I didn't know what a I knew what a hippie coffee house was, you know.
Right.
But he said, I just think we need to do that. And so if you remember, Wayne, by the time we got back,
what happened was the house emptied up and it came close to Christmas time. You guys were all coming back. I remember how you would stop traveling. You came back and that house was emptied. And so we decided, and I was teaching school at the time. I was teaching high school. And so the house ended up, and I was sort of in charge of dealing with who was be renting it. And so since it was empty, I said, well, why don't we just sit in this house? And why don't we just, there's no furniture. Let's just lay on the floor. The house was heated with I remember so well, there was a house that was heated with a central air, just a small gas heater that was in the front room. And we all laid on the floor around the walls just because there was no other furniture in the house. And we were all praying for how to develop and how would we open up this kind of coffee house and begin to invite people in. And
we remember Ray kept saying, it's got to be near the campus of Anderson College so the people can walk to it.
Exactly. So this was already a block and a half, and we were in this empty house. And suddenly, after I remember it was several nights we laid around on the floor in front of that heater praying and saying, God, where would we be at? And finally, I don't remember who came up with the idea. One of us in prayer said, well, what about right here? I mean, we're in the middle of an empty house. It's small. It's only five rooms. But
and to how many blocks from the campus?
About a block and a half. So we were already there and it was empty. So I remember talking to my dad and said, look, we can't afford rent, but the house is empty. Is it all right? We can use this house for meetings in. And my dad was so impressed. He was a believer, of course. And he was so impressed with the changes in our life. Yeah. During that phase of my brother and myself, he was familiar with, and he offered to let us use that house for gathering in and for us to stay in and sleep on the floor, do whatever we needed to do with that house. So it was a real blessing when he said that.
I don't know if you remember, Wayne, but we actually got in the car, that old car, in a snowstorm and drove to Lebanon, which was about three hours away, to talk to your dad face to face. And your parents were so they were so amazing. They were so tolerant and accepting, even when, you know, you guys grew your hair really long. I mean, and I can't remember if he charged us rent or if we just paid him what we could, or do you remember?
I don't think he charged us immediately. We didn't, none of us had any money.
Yeah,
in those days, and so I don't think he charged us immediately, and I think we just sort of discussed that if we could afford it, we would begin to contribute. I don't remember that at all. I just remember how blessed we were to meet there, and suddenly people just started being attracted. It was just an amazing thing. People just started filling up the place.
Yeah,
it was just amazing.
Wayne, I remember we got an old upright piano and put it in the corner. And again, you're right. There was no furniture in there. It was just there might have been one little chair in one of the rooms, but I don't think there was any furniture in the living room it was like a double room kind of thing. But, but we put an old upright piano in the corner. And of course, your brother Bud had a bass guitar. Ray had a guitar. I think you played the guitar.
Yeah.
Of course, Carl did too.
Yeah.
And you're right. I don't know that we advertised it at all.
There wasn't any advertising.
Yeah.
It was just fascinating how people of the actually it was from the revival that had happened in the February of 70 that many of the college students that we were familiar with had really been turned on to Jesus and had and their lives had been changed, and they started finding out and coming together for those meetings, and it just started growing like crazy.
And Wayne, I remember the first meeting we ever did there.
Wow.
We decided we would do it on Friday and Saturday nights. And the typical format was we would sing and we would talk about Jesus and we'd take a break and people would talk.
Yeah.
We'd sing, you know, with same thing.
Yeah.
Go back and play a little bit, sing. Yeah. But the I believe it was the first night, Wayne, you invited your class.
It was actually, that wasn't the first night. It was probably the second or third weekend.
It was early on, though. It was early on.
It was very early on,
And you were a high school English teacher in Elwood, Indiana.
Correct.
Public school. Correct. Public school.
Yep.
And what caused you to invite the whole class to come over?
Well, I taught freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors. I was a speech teacher as well as an English teacher. And so during the process that the students found out that the house next door to where I was actually staying and part of the house that I had control over was having free music. And a whole bunch of them started to turn out. Not all of them the first week, but a lot of them did.
It was incredible how many. And we're talking about, what are they? It was like a half an hour away, wasn't it, from Anderson?
Yeah, it was at least a half hour away. Yeah. It's at least half hour away. But many may just spontaneously begin to show up. And over the next few months, over a 3 or 4 months period of meeting together every weekend, those students, many of them, and so whatever whoever came would tell their friends in the school, and so they would all jump in cars and come. It was just an amazing situation. The amazing thing is that I don't know that any of them were believers before that point.
I don't think they were.
But there were actually, this is just what was amazing, there were actually 70 who I knew of that actually yielded their hearts to the Lord during those times of those meetings in that house. It was just an amazing time.
And I remember the first night your students came, and we gave an invitation, and we told them to go in this little room next door, the bedroom, I think.
It was the bedroom. It was the bedroom, but I don't remember there being a bed in it, actually.
I think it was empty. But
I think it was empty, too. Yeah.
Practically the whole practically everybody from your class there that night went in that room.
Oh, it was,
and they cried. I mean, that this wasn't like some kind of flippant
thing. It was impossible for anybody else to get in the room. It was just packed out.
Remember, there were tears. This wasn't some little flippant high school fad kind of thing. They were moved.
Yes.
And you're right. We got more and more people coming. And this was just a regular residential area.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course, we were driving a hearse by that time.
Yes.
And we had a cross in the front yard that we had set up. And the whole residential neighborhood wasn't exactly pleased. The fact that we, on the weekends, we had cars where crowds of young people coming in and a hearse sitting in front of the house.
Well, Wayne, there was a lady across the street. I know you remember her.
Oh, my, yes.
She was hostile toward us. And she was,
oh, boy.
She was snooping on us all the time. There was another neighbor behind your house, and she was in front of your house, and they would talk back and forth about what was going on. And I think the cops even sent a narc out there secretly to one of our meetings. But I'll never forget the lady across the street. She was very old.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, the neighbors began to get a petition to get us kicked out. And they happened to take the petition to a neighbor who was about a block behind us. And he was the one who his parents had actually previously owned that house, and they were believers. And he took the petition and tore it up in their presence and said, no way you can do it. My parents would love it, the fact that there are Christians meeting in that house.
I remember him, and if I remember right, he said something to the effect that on his dad's dying bed, he prayed at some point near the end of his life, God, use this house for your glory. And
That's right.
Yeah, and that ended the petition. Yeah, he just said, no way.
Yep.
And he was a cop. He was an auxiliary cop, I think.
Right, right. Amazing.
I remember the lady across the street who was so hostile, and later she turned nice. Later she made us cookies and brought them over, and
and
she became our friend. But one night we were the fishermen. We were singing. Of course, you were in the fishermen in the early days. And we would go out in that hearse. And one night there was a lot of cars parked up and down the street, and we parked in front of her. directly in front of her house instead of across the street at our house.
Yeah.
And she contacted us like the next day during the day. And she said, please don't ever do that again. She said, she said, I'm an old lady. I got up in the middle of the night to get a glass of water. And I looked out the window and there was a hearse sitting directly in front of my front door. And she really got freaked out, you know.
It was an amazing time for sure.
It really was. And so I think we ran that thing for about 6 or 7 months. We really outgrew the place. You're right. There toward the end, it was like 70 or 80.
That actually became the atmosphere for many things that were birthed. That were based in that house. The next place of a rehabilitation center named Joel's Place, it was actually moved from there. The meeting sort of moved from there.
Yeah.
And then the Christian bookstore that we started was started there in that place.
Yeah.
So
it was a breeding ground of a lot of ministries.
Exactly.
The rehabilitation house was helped by it was Ivan and Violet Weitzel, who were older. They were Don Weitzel's parents.
Correct.
And that again, that was another thing that was, what's the word I'm looking at? Just one of the earmarks of the Jesus movement was communes.
Yes.
People living in big houses together.
Correct.
And I remember Billy and Brenda Seibert helped run that place. But let's talk about the little green house a little bit longer. So we moved out of there.
Sure.
We moved out of the house, or the ministry moved out. And by that time, I think you were living in your house behind there.
Correct.
And your two brothers, myself and Don Weitzel, who were the later incarnation of the Fishermen as a music group, as a band.
Correct.
The band was Bud, Carl, me, and Don Mansound. So we took over the two bedrooms, bunk beds, two bedrooms. And so we still had that empty living room, and you felt led, and this was another thing that the book talks about, that sprang up all over America was Christian bookstores.
Correct.
Before this time, there weren't that many Christian bookstores and Christian music stores. And so tell me if I've got this right. You decided to do some, now this is according to your brother, Carl. You went out and got some wood.
Yeah. What happened was, there was a need. There was a lot of material, books, and particularly music that was available that a local Christian bookstore wasn't carrying, and it was not available. And all these young people that had become believers wanted that material and was hungry for it, and it just nobody had it available. And so I felt like I was impressed by the Lord to begin a coffee house, or excuse me, a bookstore. But what happened was I had no money. I mean, really, by that time,
none of us
did. By that time, I was struggling financially, and we were doing everything and giving everything away to people who were in need. And
let me butt in here. By that time, by that time, you had decided to go full time in the Lord's work, and you only taught school 1 year.
That is correct.
So you weren't getting you weren't getting a paycheck anymore from the school.
That's exactly right. By the end of the summer, the school was out and I was out, and there was no income, and it was just an amazing time when I felt like I was supposed to do this, but I had no money. How to start a bookstore? And so I offered the Lord everything I had. I counted my wallet. What change I collected together was $6.
$6.
And I didn't know what to do. I said, Lord, here's my $6. This is all I have. How can I start a bookstore? And so somehow the idea came to take those $6 and invest in a board from a local lumber company. And I cut it in foot squares. And my brother and I, Carl and I, wood burned the picture of Christ into these wood boards. And I took a blowtorch and burnt the edges of it to make it look like it was all burned in the wood. And we sold those. And I took all of that money and began to invest in a T-shirt, buttons with Jesus' name on it, or a sign of a fish on it, or a bumper sticker. And I would sell those and take the profit from that. And I kept doing that for the first full year. I didn't take anything out of it for a living. We just kept on reinvesting. And in the little greenhouse is where we started, right there. Now that the meetings were moved out of there for in a close by house, we started, and we had a few records that we would had no racks. We would lean them up on the floor against the wall.
Yeah.
Had a little table with a spinner that held 12 cards, greeting cards, like birthday and anniversary and get well. And we had that set there, and we just kept on growing and growing and growing into a huge store.
Oh, yeah.
We ended up moving downtown.
Yeah. Now, and are you telling me that the wood cost $6?
Yes. I just spent the whole $6 on boards. It was just, I can't remember if it was one or two boards that I bought, but we cut it up into sections and wood burned the picture of Christ on them. Yeah.
And Wayne, I've got to tell you this. You've been my friend for years. We have always talked about you. There is no one in the entire universe that can squeeze more out of a dollar. I get more done with a small amount of money than you. I mean, it's a real gift.
Well, thank you.
But it's also, I almost started crying when you were talking about this, an indication of God not needing anything more than what we got.
Yes.
He doesn't need a whole lot. He that just needs us to be available, and he'll take it. And boy, you're right. I got to tell you this before we talk about the store moving uptown.
Okay.
You fell in love with your wife. She started helping out at the store, right?
Yeah. Ray wanted, we were so busy with so many other things, and we had started a newspaper.
That's
and
right.
We were so involved in running errands and doing things and setting up meetings and so many other things that I didn't have time to just sit there in the store waiting on a few people to show up at this front room of this little greenhouse. And Ray wanted to hire the young lady who ended up being my wife to work there. And I was resistant. Oh, I did not want that. I wasn't interested in that. But she ended up sitting there in our house, and over about 6 months or so, it just developed into a relationship. Yep.
I remember when your brother Carl and your brothers and me went to New England. because we felt the Lord was leading us there, and you and Ray felt you should stay in Anderson. And lo and behold, it wasn't 3 months before you were both married.
That was a wild time for sure.
Well, I want to tell you, you married the cream of the crop. You married a wonderful wife, Diane. Okay, but I've got to tell you this, and I don't know if I should say this on the air, as they say. But again, now the rooms, other than what other little things you had in there to put the plaques on and the cards, we still never put much furniture in that house.
That is correct.
But Bud and Carl and Don and I live there, and you know, two different bedrooms. But one of the bedrooms, you had to walk through the living room to get to the bathroom.
Correct. There's only one little bathroom in that house.
Well, I'll just say it's your brother who's in heaven now. We forgot at times that this was a store, because I think you opened up at 10 o'clock.
I think that's right.
So it was our house before 10. And I think we had been up really late one night singing or whatever. We might have been on the road. And Bud woke up, you know, we slept late. It was like 10:15, 10:20, and Diane was there. Nobody, thank God, nobody else was in the store. But Diane was there. We had a chair there. We did have one chair there, and she was sitting there.
There was one desk and a chair for her.
Yeah. And I remember I was talking to her, and your brother forgot that there was a woman in the house. So he walks through the house in his underwear to go take a shower. And he just walked right by Diane. Diane turned to me. She said, "Did Bud just walk through the room in his underwear?" I said, "Yeah." And later I questioned him. He said, "Well, I was already in the middle of the room when I realized it," and he said, "it was just as quick to walk to the shower as to turn around." But anyway, that's the only time that happened.
Yeah, that's right.
But Wayne,
well, she remembers that very well.
Yeah. I remember, Wayne, I don't know if you remember this, but you were praying because, again, the little grain house, the store outgrew the house. Not only did the coffee house outgrow it, but the store did.
Yes.
And you were praying really hard about whether to expand and move uptown on Main Street. Was it Main Street? You were two places uptown, right? If I remember right. Yeah.
Yeah. One of them was on Meridian Street. The other one was right on the square, right across from the courthouse.
Yeah, heart of town. Right. And you were praying about, should I take a leap of faith and move out of this little greenhouse? And Bud and Carl and I were in Houston, Texas. I think it was Houston, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, we were visiting the daughter of Francis Hunter, who was a big author back then. So she went, took us to this church, and it was, you're never supposed to say ethnic groups, but it was a Chinese church. Everybody there was Chinese except us. Okay. And the man was preaching, and he was talking about taking steps of faith. And all of a sudden, he just used this as an example. He said, for example, you're praying about moving that store uptown.
Wow.
The Lord says, just go ahead and do it, and he'll bless it. Take a step.
I don't remember that, but I sure believe it.
And it's like chills went down our spine, like, gosh. And I remember we told you about it. You probably don't remember it now, but we told you, well, this guy said, you're praying about moving the store uptown. Go ahead and do it. And you did it. And it really blossomed uptown.
Oh, my. Yeah. It was an amazing move. We painted it bright orange to fit the times of the culture of the time.
And tell people what the name of the store was.
It was a Sunshine House. We called it the Sunshine House. So Solomon's Porch actually has changed to Sunshine House. And it was right located right between two bars. It was a bar, a downtown bar on both sides, one side and then one on the other one. And so we decided to stay open late in the Friday and Saturday nights. And the people would leave one bar and by mistake come in the store. And we developed a great relationship with some of those alcoholics that, and led some of them to the Lord, were able to pray with them. It was just an excellent time.
Yeah. And it became a health food store too. And, one half was health food. But it was a real, how do I say this? We weren't hiding in a corner. We were presenting the gospel out in the marketplace, right in the middle of town.
Exactly right. Exactly right. We weren't embarrassed about it or hiding it at all. And it was passing out the newspapers right out in front of the store, right on the street. There was an openness about it and such an excitement in all the ones who were converted and on fire for the Lord, that it was just an amazing. Nobody held back. It was a wonderful time.
Well, that store sort of, in a way, took the place of the Solomon's Porch in that it was a gathering place. We didn't have public meetings there so much.
Right.
But people, that was a hangout.
Oh, sure.
Is that fair to say? It was a hangout.
Yeah, that's right. And it branched out into so many. We gave away free clothing. We sold books and Bibles and records on discount, 20% off, no matter what it was in the store. And years later, I recognized that the material was only a 40% markup. We were actually giving away 50% of everything that we made. But that was more than we intended. But we were actually using that as a tithe to the whole body of Christ, because people from every church and every denomination would come in that store for materials. And so we did not belong to a specific church to tithe to. So we ended up tithing to the whole body of Christ and people, and helped them with free clothes and so, and then developed into cheaper food, developed a food co-op out of it.
And it was That's right.
It was just a time of helping many, many people. Yeah.
And I shouldn't say this, and we might edit this out, but I remember one time a pastor came in there and he wanted a discount of the 20%.
Yeah.
Because he was a pastor, and you said, we're giving everybody a discount.
Right.
So, no, we're not going to give you a further discount. We're giving you 20%.
Right.
But he kind of thought he should be treated special because he was a man of the cloth, as they say.
Yeah.
Now, Wayne, we got to talk about a couple of more things. And I just want to say about you, it's really true. You were a real pioneer. You helped start the coffee house. You helped start a bookstore in town that reached a lot of people. But you also helped start probably the first Christian school in town, if I remember right.
Yes, that's correct. That is correct.
Liberty Christian School.
I was asked to be the youngest person on a board of several Christians. There was a Christian doctor in the area and a few other Christians that were concerned about and wanting to start a Christian school. And I think I was the token member with long hair on that board. But yes, we were instrumental in starting that school. And it's still in existence, still going strong.
Oh, it's a big school. And you were probably the token long hair, because they knew the long hairs were having babies, and so
that's correct.
The students would probably come from the kids of our crowd, you know.
Right, that's right.
Okay, now I had Dale Yancey on the show a few weeks ago, who was part of a group in Burlington, Vermont, where the fishermen, when we first moved, went to New England. We lived there in this commune, and I had this burden, and I shared it with you guys. And as it turned out, Carl and Bud and I decided to go to New England, And the other two members of the Fishermen at that time, which was you and Ray,
correct,
decided to stay in Anderson. And right, that was really the wisdom and hand of the Lord, which I don't know that we saw it as being as significant as it looks now, because there were a lot of people in Anderson, a lot of kids that didn't fit in any of the churches.
Exactly. Right. That was exactly the reason why we ended up feeling led to stay.
And you felt like, no, let's don't just all go off to New England. Somebody right, needs to teach the Bible and nurture. Exactly. And so you both stayed there in Anderson. And from that, a church actually formed.
That's correct.
From those people. But
yes,
I remember Bud and I and Carl kept praying for New England. Well, we didn't have a clue where New England. That's, what, six states. And but we just felt New England. And so you were instrumental, again, in placing us at the right place in New England. It was God just had his hand on you. And you heard, we had all heard of this band called Love Song.
Right, correct.
Which was...
that was one of the most popular groups at the time.
In fact, this book that I read, God's Forever Family, says that he did a poll of Jesus people. Love Song and Larry Norman, those were the two.
And Andre Crouch.
Yeah. And so, but Love Song was a California group, not on a major label yet, and it was hard to find their records. And so you read the Hollywood Free Paper. Tell me if I'm right. The Hollywood Free Paper.
Yep.
They had this little ad about a commune in Burlington, Vermont.
Correct.
Christian commune. And they had on there, we are the Eastern distributors of Love Song Records. Because they had come from that area where Love Song was.
Yep.
You ordered some records from them because...
Correct.
We didn't know anywhere. You didn't know anywhere else to order them, and you put on the order, "The fishermen are coming to New England." That's all you put. Just the fishermen are coming to New England. New England. Well, we get this letter from these people, and they are just happy to welcome us there. They just went on and on. You can base your ministry out of our place. You can live there and go in and out. We've got beds for you. Come on, come on. And so that's where we went. We went to Burlington because of that.
Right.
And of course, it's a long story that talking to Dale Yancey when we got there, nobody knew who wrote the letter because we were told at the door there wasn't room for us. We were further told that we were the wrong fishermen, that they had met a group out in Missouri, and we were not them. And so for like 24 hours, we had no place. although there was a InterVarsity college leader who met us that night and had us stay at his home. But anyway, as it turned out, we did base there, and we did a lot of wonderful things with them. But again, you just stepped out and God used it. Yeah. One other thing you're well known for in my mind, and I didn't even realize this till maybe 35, 40 years after the fact, but we've talked about this before, but you are the inspiration for one of my most requested songs. It's 50 years old this year. There goes a real Christian man. I was talking to a guy last night from Massachusetts, and he said, that's the song I remember. And for years I told people that this was a fictitious song. And it was sort of, but it really wasn't also.
You're saying it was an inspiration for a fictitious song.
That's a great way to put it. Subconsciously, it was... Yeah. And I've known songs to be that way. You write a song, and then later you realize, well, subconsciously I was thinking about this or that. But we got to tell this story.
Well, you know, prophetic in it, right? The song says that it was a bald-headed man in a pickup truck. And at the time, I was driving a Volkswagen Beetle and had long hair that I could reach behind my back.
Yep.
But, yes,
are you saying things are a little bit thinner now?
Well, I'm bald-headed and drive a pickup truck, so. Yeah, that's an amazing event. That happened in a very different, strange way. The newspaper that we were printing called Song of the Disciple, and Ray Renner wrote most of the articles, and I did the artwork and laid out the paper and then we had it printed at a newspaper company in Indianapolis. And I can't remember if I was going after the newspapers and loading them up, or if I was taking the patterns and the pages to be printed. I can't remember what happened, but I stopped to get gas at a station in Indianapolis. There was some guy there as I was filling up with gas, that was just alone, and started talking with him and found out that, somebody, while he was in the gas station, had stolen his bicycle, or excuse me, his motorcycle that he was actually touring America in, and had no money and no place to stay, no vehicle.
No clothes?
What clothes he had on his back.
Yeah, you know, other than what he was wearing.
And so I felt really sad for him, and hearing his story, I think maybe he was asking me for money, but I didn't have any. But I offered him to ride with us and that we would put him up. And so he actually came and stayed there in that house with us.
At the little green house. Yep.
At the little green house. Yeah. And he stayed for 2 or 3 weeks and then eventually moved on. And we prayed for him and talked to him about the Lord continually for those 2 or 3 weeks.
He was from Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Wow, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so now that's, you're telling me that's the inspiration for the story. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I didn't realize it till about 40 years ago, because this song, as you know, is about somebody who's down on his luck and a right. Christian picks him up and takes him home. And
right.
I remember walking in when you brought Jim, his name was Jim, and oh man, he was dirty, he was scraggly. Oh. His clothes were dirty, and he got a shower, and he was a great guy. And
yeah,
he never did come to the Lord, but he certainly—
Well, he was there, that's correct.
He went to our meetings, he listened to the music, he talked about it, and yes. then finally he connected with relatives in Toronto, Canada. And I think we took up money, bought him a bus ticket, and bought him a little suitcase, and— There were a lot of tears that day, and I've always hoped that compassion and love.
It was a seed sown, brother. It was a seed sown. Well, there were many seeds sown in those days, for sure.
Yep. And, Wayne, now I'm going to cry here. I'm trying not to, but you have been such an instrument in so many ways you'll never know, Wayne, on this earth. I'll never forget when we were so broke. We were all so broke. But you were my landlord.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever missed a payment, you know. I think I paid you every month, but at least I think I did. Maybe I didn't.
I can't remember those days, man. I remember the house, and I remember you living there, and that was a blessing.
Yeah. But I remember I was so broke, Wayne, that I didn't have $40 to go. And we were supposed to go to Wichita, Kansas to see Trisha's parents. And I came to you, and of course I was humiliated. I was embarrassed. And I asked if I could borrow $40 from you, and you said no. You said, no, I won't lend it to you. But I want to give you $40.
Yeah.
And Wayne, I'll never forget that. You will never know how that ministered to me. And I just don't want you to ever feel like, and many people our age now, feel like we're washed up and the best years are over and all that. And you will just never know how God has used you and Diane for so many years. And I love you. I appreciate it.
I love you too, brother, so much.
That's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. I want to sing this song that we've played many times on this show, but I want to dedicate this to Wayne since he was the inspiration to the writing of this song. This was performed recently with my band, Lawrence Tuning and Damascus Road. This is, once again, There Goes a Real Christian Man.
Again, stranded in Nebraska, needing some money, needing a friend. I was feeling sad and lonely as I stood beside the road, when a bald-headed man in a pickup truck picked me up and took me home. There goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man. Well, I spotted a little New Testament by the radio, and I hadn't made in 5 or 6 days. I was hungry, tired, and cold, and I thought this man was kind of different to pick a tramp right off the street. Then he said, my name is Billy, I'm gonna fix you something to eat when we get home. There goes a real Christian man. I said, there goes a real Christian man. The Lord had changed his life. As we walked into the kitchen, he introduced me to his wife. He said, as long as you're in these parts, you'll always have a beer. Oh, I knew I'd met a Christian by the things he did and said. Oh, there goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man. So, and then I got back on the road, and I never got saved. 2 years later, in a park in Buffalo. Well, I've seen a lot of phonies, a lot of hypocrites telling lies, but I know I've seen one Christian Billy I'll love until I die.
My 88 friends, I will sing you a song.